Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So we'll continue with a few more readings from the Vedana Saṅyutta, the Connected Discourses on Feeling. This is Saṅyutta 36, number 4, entitled The Bottomless Abyss. Bhikkhus, when the uninstructed worldling makes the statement, "In the great ocean there is a bottomless abyss," he makes such a statement about something that is non-existent and unreal. This, bhikkhus, is rather a designation for painful bodily feelings, that is, bottomless abyss. When the uninstructed worldling is contacted by a painful bodily feeling, he sorrows, grieves, and laments. He weeps and beats his breast and becomes distraught. This is called an uninstructed worldling who has not risen up in the bottomless abyss, one who has not gained a foothold. But, bhikkhus, when the instructed noble disciple is contacted by a painful bodily feeling, he does not sorrow, grieve, or lament. He does not weep and beat his breast and become distraught. This is called an instructed noble disciple who has risen up in the bottomless abyss, one who has gained a foothold. And then verses. One who cannot endure the arisen painful feelings, bodily feelings that sap one's life, who trembles when they touch him, a weakling of little strength, who weeps out loud and wails, he has not risen up in the bottomless abyss, nor has he even gained a foothold. But one who is able to endure them, the arisen painful feelings, bodily feelings that sap one's life, who trembles not when they touch him, he has risen up in the bottomless abyss, and he has also gained a foothold. Pretty self-explanatory. Okay. Vedana Saṅyutta 36, number 6, the dart. Bhikkhus, the uninstructed worldling feels a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, and a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. The instructed noble disciple, too, feels a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, and a neither pleasant nor painful feeling. Therein, bhikkhus, what is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the instructed noble disciple and the uninstructed worldling? Venerable sir, our teachings are rooted in the Blessed One, guided by the Blessed One. Take recourse in the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One would clear up the meaning of this statement. Having heard it from him, the bhikkhus will remember it. Then listen and attend closely, bhikkhus. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir, the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, when the uninstructed worldling is being contacted by a painful feeling, he sorrows, grieves, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast, and becomes distraught. He feels two feelings, a bodily one and a mental one. Suppose they were to strike a man with a dart, and then they would strike him immediately afterwards with a second dart, so that the man would feel a feeling caused by two darts. So too, when the uninstructed worldling is being contacted by a painful feeling, he feels two feelings, a bodily one and a mental one. Being contacted by that same painful feeling, he harbors aversion towards it. When he harbors aversion towards painful feeling, the underlying tendency to aversion towards painful feeling lies behind this. Being contacted by painful feeling, he seeks delight in sensual pleasure. For what reason? Because the uninstructed worldling does not know of any escape from painful feeling other than sensual pleasure. When he seeks delight in sensual pleasure, the underlying tendency to lust for pleasant feeling lies behind this. He does not understand, as it really is, the origin and the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these feelings. When he does not understand these things, The underlying tendency to ignorance in regard to neither painful nor pleasant feeling lies behind this. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he feels it attached. If he feels a painful feeling, he feels it attached. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he feels it attached. This bhikkhu is called an uninstructed worldling who is attached to birth, aging, and death, who is attached to sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair, who is attached to suffering, I say. Bhikkhus, when the instructed noble disciple is contacted by a painful feeling, he does not sorrow, grieve, or lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become distraught. He feels one feeling, a bodily one, not a mental one. Suppose they were to strike a man with a dart, but they would not strike him immediately afterwards with a second dart, so that the man would feel a feeling caused by one dart only. So too, when the instructed noble disciple is contacted by a painful feeling, he feels one feeling, a bodily one, not a mental one. Being contacted by that same painful feeling, he harbors no aversion towards it. Since he harbors no aversion towards painful feeling, the underlying tendency to aversion towards painful feeling does not lie behind this. Being contacted by painful feeling, he does not seek delight in sensual pleasure. Being contacted by painful feeling, he does not seek delight in sensual pleasure. For what reason? Because the instructed noble disciple knows of an escape from painful feeling other than sensual pleasure. Since he does not seek delight in sensual pleasure, the underlying tendency to lust for pleasant feeling does not lie behind this. He understands, as it really is, the origin and the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these feelings. Since he understands these things, the underlying tendency to ignorance in regard to neither painful nor pleasant feeling does not lie behind this. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. If he feels a painful feeling, he feels it detached. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. This bhikkhu is called a noble disciple who is detached from birth, aging, and death, who is detached from sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair, who is detached from suffering, I say. This bhikkhu is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the instructed noble disciple and the uninstructed worldling. And then the verse, the wise one, learned, does not feel the pleasant and painful mental feeling. This is the great difference between the wise one and the worldling. For the learned one who has comprehended Dhamma, who clearly sees this world and the next, desirable things do not provoke his mind. Towards the undesired, he has no aversion. For him, attraction and repulsion no more exist. Both have been extinguished, brought to an end. Having known the dust-free, sorrowless state, the transcender of existence rightly understands. So that's a classic sutta on Vedana, the second dart being the suffering, essentially, that is put on to painful experience, especially painful experience. And that's the dart that we don't have to bear if we learn how to see things with equanimity. There was Ajahn Sudanto has popularized the phrase in White Salmon. Almost everybody seems to know it. Pain is ordinary, suffering is optional, something like that. Like everybody we walk past on alms rounds says, "Oh yeah, pain is ordinary, suffering is optional." Any questions or thoughts on?
Yeah. So could that second dart also be considered like the self one creates around the pleasant, painful, or neutral feelings?
Well, that's certainly part of that kind of response is, you know, the perception of self and the way that involves the whole resistance, you know, because it's taken, not only is there the aversion, but the aversion is bound up with this sense of this body is mine or this pain is mine. You know, all of the things that go along with the self view kind of complicate even more. Yeah. Okay. Thought I'd also a suggestion from Lumpa of a good sutta that brings into the teachings of that brings in teachings around feeling is Majjhima number 74. It's the Dighanaka Sutta. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Rajagaha in the Boar's Cave on the mountain Vulture Peak. Then the wanderer Dighanaka went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he stood at one side and said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, my doctrine and view is this, nothing is acceptable to me. This view of yours, Agivesana, nothing is acceptable to me. Is not at least that view acceptable to you? Zing. If this view of mine were acceptable to me, Master Gotama, it too would be the same. It too would be the same. Well, Agivesana, there are plenty in the world who say, it too would be the same. It too would be the same. Yet they do not abandon that view, and they take up still some other view. Those are few in the world who say, it too would be the same, it too would be the same, and who abandon that view and do not take up some other view. Getting a round scolding here. Agivesana, there are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, everything is acceptable to me. There are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, nothing is acceptable to me. And there are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, something is acceptable to me, something is not acceptable to me. Among these, the view of those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine in view, everything is acceptable to me, is close to lust, close to bondage, close to delighting, close to holding, close to clinging. The view of those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine and the view, nothing is acceptable to me, is close to non-lust, close to non-bondage, close to non-delighting, close to non-holding, close to non-clinging. When this was said, the wanderer Dighanaka remarked, Master Gotama commends my point of view. Master Gotama recommends my point of view. Agivesana, as to those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine in view, something is acceptable to me, something is not acceptable to me, the view of theirs as to what is acceptable is close to lust, close to bondage, close to delighting, close to holding, close to clinging, while the view of theirs as to what is not acceptable is close to non-lust, close to non-bondage, close to non-delighting, close to non-holding, close to non-clinging. Now, Agivesana, a wise man among those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine in view, everything is acceptable to me, considers thus, if I obstinately adhere to my view, everything is acceptable to me, and declare, only this is true, anything else is wrong, then I may clash with the two others, with a recluse or Brahmin who holds the doctrine in view, nothing is acceptable to me, and with a recluse or Brahmin who holds the doctrine in view, something is acceptable to me, something is not acceptable to me. I may clash with these two, and when there is a clash, there are disputes. When there are disputes, there are quarrels. When there are quarrels, there is vexation. Thus, foreseeing for himself clashes, disputes, quarrels, and vexation, he abandons that view and does not take up some other view. This is how there comes to be the abandoning of those views. This is how there comes to be the relinquishment, or the relinquishing of these views. A wise man among those recluses and Brahmins who holds the doctrine in view, nothing is acceptable to me, considers thus, If I obstinately adhere to my view, nothing is acceptable to me, and declare only this is true, anything else is wrong, then I may clash with the two others. With a recluse or Brahmin who holds the doctrine of view, everything is acceptable to me, and with a recluse or Brahmin who holds the doctrine of view, something is acceptable to me, something is not. I may clash with these two, and when there is a clash, there are disputes. When there are disputes, there are quarrels. When there are quarrels, there is vexation. Thus, foreseeing for himself clashes, disputes, quarrels, and vexation, he abandons that view, does not take up some other view. This is how there becomes to be the abandoning of these views. This is how there comes to be the relinquishing of these views. And the same formula for the third recluse or Brahmin. This is how there comes to be the abandoning of these views. This is how there comes to be the relinquishing of these views. Now, Agivesana, this body made of material form, consisting of the four great elements, procreated by a mother and father, and built up out of boiled rice and porridge, is subject to impermanence, to being worn and rubbed away, to dissolution and disintegration. It should be regarded as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a dart, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. When one regards this body thus, one abandons desire for the body, affection for the body, subservience to the body. There are, Agivesana, three kinds of feeling: pleasant feeling, painful feeling, and neither painful nor pleasant feeling. On the occasion when one feels pleasant feeling, one does not feel painful feeling, or neither painful nor pleasant feeling. On that occasion, one feels only pleasant feeling. On the occasion when one feels painful feeling, one does not feel pleasant feeling, or neither painful nor pleasant feeling. On that occasion, one feels only painful feeling. On the occasion when one feels neither painful nor pleasant feeling, one does not feel pleasant feeling or painful feeling. On that occasion, one feels only neither painful nor pleasant feeling. Pleasant feeling, Agivesana, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away, and ceasing. Painful feeling, too, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away, and ceasing. Neither painful nor pleasant feeling, too, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away, and ceasing. Seeing thus, a well-taught noble disciple becomes disenchanted with pleasant feeling, disenchanted with painful feeling, disenchanted with neither painful nor pleasant feeling. Being disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. A bhikkhu whose mind is liberated thus, Agivesana, sides with none and disputes with none. He employs the speech currently used in the world without adhering to it. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was standing behind the Blessed One, fanning him. Then he thought, the Blessed One indeed speaks to us of abandoning these things through direct knowledge. The Sublime One indeed speaks to us of the relinquishing of these things through direct knowledge. As the Venerable Sariputta considered this, through not clinging, his mind was liberated from the taints. But in the wanderer Diganaka, the spotless, immaculate vision of the Dhamma arose. All that is subject to arising is subject to cessation. The wanderer Diganaka saw the Dhamma, attained the Dhamma, understood the Dhamma, fathomed the Dhamma. He crossed beyond doubt, did away with perplexity, gained intrepidity, and became independent of others in the teacher's dispensation. In other words, he became a stream enterer. Then he said to the Blessed One, Magnificent Master Gotama, Magnificent Master Gotama, Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gotama for refuge, and to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of bhikkhus. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. So that's the occasion of Sariputta's complete liberation, being an arahant while listening to this discourse and fanning the Blessed One. It's just a beautiful sutta for one, with all the how it starts with Diganaka and his bold statement of his views and the Buddha's refuting it, and then going through his teaching, and then him realizing a stream entry. And it also just really underscores the power and potential, I think, of contemplation of Vedana, because it kind of can attack both the craving that causes us dukkha, craving based on feeling, as we know from the dependent origination cycle, and it also, when one sees the impermanence and the arising and ceasing of all three forms of feeling over and over again, then one gains insight into impermanence, not self, aspects of the teaching. So contemplation of the inherent suffering and attaching to pleasant feeling, aversion to unpleasant feeling, not seeing neutral feeling, as well as watching it in its arising and cessation, is a very full path of contemplation. Any questions or thoughts?
I don't think I understand what the Buddha is getting at when he says when one feels pleasant feeling at that time, one only feels pleasant feeling, not painful or neutral. I can easily imagine, sitting, listening to a Dhamma talk with a backache, and the Dhamma is very pleasant and the backache is not. And that would seem to be simultaneous. So I'm wondering what the purpose of that statement is.
Well, I guess in my my understanding is that it may be those particular things are happening more or less in the same sphere of time, but that at any one moment of attention, any one brief moment, there can only be the experience of one kind of feeling, just like consciousness in general. You can't be conscious of hearing the Dhamma talk and feeling the pain in your back at exactly the same time. Your attention, of course, will move back and forth very quickly, but it can't be literally simultaneous. And to me, I don't know, that just kind of also underscores how quickly the experience of feeling can change. One moment there can be pleasant feeling, next moment there's painful feeling, just like the simile of the bubbles popping up in a rain puddle, just one after another, constantly arising, popping. That's how I would interpret that anyway. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll wrap it up there then.
Andamaya dhammakataya sadhukaram dadamase
sadhu.